Every time our athletes walk into this weight room, they're going to be pushed to the max.
Let's go!
The barbell hasn't changed in over 100 years. I can take a 25-pound plate, and we'll go out on the turf, and I'll have you hating life. We talk about straining your gut, pushing past that comfort level. I want a lot of energy.
What better breeding ground is there for being a success in life than the weight room?
Hey guys, welcome back to Iron Game Chalk Talk. I'm your host, Ron McKeefer, and this is episode number 268. I want to thank you guys for listening each week. Really appreciate those of you that like, share, comment. Just continues to help me highlight the great people we have in our profession. Also want to thank our sponsors, and specifically Train Heroic, for bringing this episode to you for free. I only partner with companies and people that I believe, companies that have both product and people that I believe in, and Train Heroic is phenomenal group of people, and then they have one of the best products out there. So if you're in the market, reach out to them. If not, the next time you see them, just let them know how much you appreciate them for being a part of this. This week, I'm joined by a good buddy of mine, Raph Ruiz. He is, we worked together almost, 20 years ago now?
Oh, my God.
22 years ago now? Hating us both quite a bit, but we worked together at Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and just a guy that I came to respect very early in our friendship and in our working relationship, and a guy that's always seen it a little bit different than everybody else, but in a good way. And I just always respected that about him. And so, man, it's finally 268 episodes, but we finally got you on the show, brother.
Wonderful. Thank you for having me. I've always watched these and have enjoyed the wonderful professionalism that you bring to the table, and it's been awesome. Absolutely amazing to watch you turn into the professional and into the ambassador of the profession that you are. So I appreciate everything that you do, Ronnie.
Thanks, man. Well, you know, you're good friends when he calls me Ronnie. That's the only few people do that, which is, I wish more people would. But now, man, I appreciate being on. And, you know, I mentioned, you know, Tampa Bay Buccaneers, but, I mean, you've done a little bit of everything. I mean, you live in the Tampa area. You've worked with the Devil Rays. You've worked with the Mutiny. You had your own business. You've worked with almost athletes in almost every possible sport there is at the highest level. I mean, Deion Sanders and Ryan Lockley. On and on and on. This goes on. Which one of those experiences, I know it's usually collective, but which experience do you point to say that that's really where you grew up as a strength coach?
I would say football. I would say hands down, and there's a close second. I always tell people within strength and conditioning, football is king because it gives you such a comprehensive viewpoint of your skills, whether you are working on absolute power and strength with, you know, my big guys up front, whether it's being agile, whether being quick, whether it's being shoulder stabilization program for my quarterbacks, whether it's being a hip stabilization program for our kickers. I mean, it's across the board. And if there's a somatotype of human body, you're going to find it on there. And you're going to find a lot of different energy systems. And so it ends up being this, if you have an opportunity, I tell young coaches this all the time, get involved with football because it will sharpen up your skills. There's a certain intensity that comes with football that doesn't come in a lot of different arenas when it comes to training, weight training, so to speak. Not to say that other sports aren't intense, but football players just bring it differently in the weight room than other people do. And then I'll say my close second, and the reason why is what you don't get, the one aspect that you miss in football is the mantra of swimming, which is efficiency. And as a strength and conditioning coach in football, everything is about Hulk smash.
Right.
You know, you want to just beat somebody to a pulp, and I want to get bigger and faster and stronger so I could do it. But what swimming taught me was there's another way to solve that same problem. We can still create power through better alignment. We can still create power through better stability. The sooner that somebody gets into the proper position, the sooner they can start producing power. And for me, once I started to apply that same principle to my ground-based athletes, it really changed a lot for us. So kind of mirroring those, I would definitely put football as the on the top of the pedal as far as strength and conditioning, but swimming gave me another look outside of the proverbial box.
Yeah, I would echo that. You know, working football most of my career and then turn around and now, you know, over the last 2 years working with a variety of Olympic sports and, you know, sports like cricket and, you know, rugby and AFL and, you know, things like that. I would have never, you know, it's made me a much better coach by far. But you're right. It's absolutely hard to replicate the intensity and the smorgasbord of body types and things with football. I'd agree with that. We don't get a chance to work with the high level of athletes like you do without having made some mistakes along the way. What's one of the biggest that you've made and how you learned from it?
I would say coming out of college, when I was in college, biomechanics, physiology, all of that stuff, for some reason, came really easy to me. The understanding of it, as well as what we often term as the coach's eye. Yeah. There's a lot of people that have great understanding of physiology, but they have difficulty watching movement and being able to figure out. We all know that something doesn't look right.
Right.
You get a squat, you can look at somebody run, you can look at it, be like, God, something looks funny about that, but I can't figure it out. I always had a really good eye for that. And so as I built that system, my system around that, and you see the effectiveness of it as a young strength and conditioning coach, you develop this, it's my way or the highway mentality. Like, I know exactly what you need, blah, 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 and I'm going to fight tooth and nail. I'm going to crack the whip, and I'm going to make you do it right.
Right.
And what I quickly learned was I kind of had my slap in the face moment was at the University of Tampa, where we spent a year and a half, 2 years, and we ended up grinding these guys. Just unbelievable, great response to the program, to the point where we won our national championship run, and all of them were in overtime. All of them were in the last minute, where our guys were just gritty. I mean, they were just fighting tooth and nail, which is amazing to me. And I remember winning the national championship. And as a young strength and conditioning coach, I was like, wow, this was amazing. This was the quote unquote, the highlight of my career. And to quickly fall off of the ledge, because I had athletes that said, I'm graduating. I'll never do another one of Raf's exercises ever again, because I made them hate it.
Right. Sure.
And that was to me, was a huge eye opener, because regardless of what happens on the field, I would want people to be better people. I would want you to make lifetime changes. And a lot of the exercises that I created, it's like all of a sudden people are like, oh, this is the greatest burger since McDonald's, and all of a sudden stop eating McDonald's.
Right.
It was hard for me to take. And so to move forward, I knew I had to come up with a different way, and that way was I had to educate up the athletes. Instead of sitting there grabbing them by the nape of the neck and saying, do pull-ups. I know you suck at pull-ups, but you're going to do them anyway because I'm the coach, and you're going to shut your mouth and you're going to do it.
Right.
All of a sudden, it became issues where I could now talk to the guys and say, I remember when the guy in the game out-jumped you. Do you know why he out-jumped you? No, I don't. Well, do you remember where you just barely didn't have enough fingertips on the ball because your hands went up? Well, right. Take a look at this. Your lats are tight. Now, all of a sudden, if your lats are tight, it's going to limit the motion of your pelvis, which limits how much force you can produce. So this is going to be very important for us if you want to jump higher to get an extra inch or two. You know, maybe it's a good idea to do these. And next thing you know, I've got guys like, hey, when are we doing pull-ups next?
Right.
And all of a sudden, you know, doing Job's exercises, you can't do more pull-ups unless you stabilize that shoulder girdle and make it stronger. So now all of a sudden you just kind of educate them up and get them to get a little bit more buy-in. And that was a game changer for me as a young coach, to get them to buy into what I was doing versus making them do it.
It's amazing how much easier your job becomes when you start to explain the why.
Oh, it's a voice saver.
No question. No question. Well, you know, I alluded to it at the beginning, but, you know, we worked at Tampa together, and, you know, I'd come from an Olympic lifting background at that time. Tampa was almost as true of a sense of high intensity as you could get. And, you know, I credit that polar, you know, those polar philosophies as being why I have an open mind and a big toolbox now. Amen. But even in that time when we were both young, I mean, you were like, man, this is what's the good, and I'm going to take that. This is the good from this, and this is the good from that. And you've kind of done that ever since I've known you. You've kind of always looked at things a little bit differently. I know you start with movement and coordinated skills and kind of work back from that. You talked about your system. Talk a little bit about your system and like what drives you to kind of take that approach.
When I was out there, I think I was there a little bit before you, and I remember walking out onto the field any free moment that I had, because I knew, again, because the physiology came easy to me. And the thing that fascinated me was, say, out of 10 linemen, if Monty wanted them to do a certain technique, why could 3 do it and 7 couldn't?
Right.
That fascinated me. And I remember going out to there and just listening to what they wanted them to do, because it was at that point, again, I thought I knew everything, and it was so let's go figure out what the coaches are trying to teach them.
Right.
And so I literally started backwards from there of saying, okay, if the coach wants them to do this technique, why can't they do it? Because to me, I wanted to solve that problem for the athlete. Okay, why can't I get my hips lower? Why can't I do this step? Why can't I do this technique? And I started to work backwards, and that's, I kind of call it ASAP, so accentuated skills acquisition programming. So I start with the skill, the end skill, and I work backwards from there to figure out how can I put the sum of the parts and get you to coordinate that better into a specific skill. And I just literally, that became my philosophy for everything. So when I started to get more into boxing, what were the boxing coaches looking for? What were the swimming coaches looking for? And anytime I do anything, I literally go to the coaches first and I say, what are you looking for? And I've been very fortunate, very blessed with opportunities to work with coaches at the highest level. And I'll tell you right now, that's kind of the feather in my cap, that I've got a chance to learn from like a David Marsh, who was an absolute technician in the pool. And so I say, you know, what are you looking for in this freestyle? Well, they're looking for this position. Okay, how can I get them to get this? Because he tells me that that's the difference between somebody making the national team and somebody winning a gold medal. I'm like, okay, let's start racking our brain and figure out. Because I quickly learned that everything is about feel. If the athlete can't feel, if they can't relate, and if they can't feel, then they just become mindless zombies, and you have no idea if they're doing the exercise right or not. And so the moment that Coach Marsh says something and he goes, okay, make sure that you feel this scapular depression. Well, boom, that tells me, okay, let's get him in the weight room. Boom, boom, boom. Remember what Coach Marsh said, yada, yada, yada. We're going to give you these 3 exercises that give you the feel for depressing your shoulder blade and getting a good catch position in the water. And all of a sudden, it becomes a the more dots that we can connect with the athletes, the greater probability that's going to transfer, and the greater buy-in, and then the greater enthusiasm that they have into the rest of the program.
Right. You know, by the way, the coach actually likes it when you value their opinion and you try to replicate that. And you got, you know, the athlete that's what they came there to do. They came there to be a better swimmer, a better football player, whatever it may be, not necessarily a better weightlifter. And, I think that's such an important lesson and point that you made that I don't want people to miss is, you know, get off your high horse about what you think you know from a physiology standpoint, a biomechanics standpoint, or strength and conditioning. Go to the coach. You know, I tell this all the time, but, you know, I had a coach that told me, if you want me to love you, then love my players. You know, go to a coach, show them that you love what their players, show them that you're valuing their input and that you're trying to create a better swim or golf or whatever it may be. And then now try to figure out how to answer those questions or those challenges in the weight room. And you've always done that. It took me a while to learn, but I have learned it now.
I mean, because in all honesty, it's we all have our problems.
Right.
In our field, you know, I come across things that I hammer my head in all the time, like, oh, why can't we solve this problem? But you may be doing 20 things that are easily solutions to those problems. And the coaches see it all the time. They're like, hey, I wish we could run this offense, but my lineman can't do this. Right. And then that's where you're like, oh, my God, I have an easy fix for that.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. It makes a lot of sense. So just even from a technique standpoint, what they're trying to teach, as well as, you know, what coach, what are you having issues with? What don't your players do that you would love for them to be able to do?
Yeah, absolutely. That's, I mean, I think, you know, to be good at that, you have to study movement and you have to, you know, you have to get outside of the four walls of the weight room. And I think that that's important as well. One of my favorite things to do when I'm looking on social media is to check out your Instagram or whatever and see Raider compete with whatever athletes you have in the weight room at the time. Raider's your son. He's how old now?
Six.
6 years old. He's a beast, but watch him train. But I mean, he's a guy that, you know, that you've obviously. What's really cool is that you've integrated your career. You know, you've blended career and family and you know, made sure that he's a part of what you do so that you can be a part of everything that he's got going on. But kind of opens up, I mean, your whole career, you've worked with athletes in the developmental process, you know, and developing rising stars. Athletes that have gone on to really, really high levels, but they didn't start there, you know. Talk a little bit about that process. I mean, you can't start necessarily with the end in mind with those athletes. You have to, you know, you have to kind of progress as they progress.
Absolutely.
What's the psychology that goes into that for you?
It's always interesting because I look at this no different than parenting. My wife and I, she has a short game approach versus, you know, this is the part where she has that, how can I fix today versus balancing that out with, I want to know what we're doing today and how it's going to look to 18-year-old Raider. And so over the course of my career, I've taken a lot of good notes about, I wish I would have done this when I was younger, on a positive note. On the negative note is, how many times have I gone through and try to fix something with my pro athletes that we just can't do.
Right.
The old dog set in his ways. You can't teach an old dog new tricks. And over the course of my career, I've learned oftentimes you can't. We don't have enough time under our belt with these athletes. Sometimes they're with us for 3 months. And with 3 months, I'm not going to make any major, major changes with them. And so what I learned was, the biggest bang for our buck is to figure out the pitfalls and then work backwards with a little bit of reverse engineering and figure out how can we avoid some of that by building some good, strong, healthy habits, some good, strong character development that'll lend well into eventually what they do down the road. And so there's a lot of moving parts to this, but, you know, we talk about one of the common things, and this still goes back to talking to the coaches. How many times do we hear a coach scream at an athlete because they don't make good decisions? It's a common thing, and we watch it on TV, we watch it from the sidelines. And so basically reverse engineering that of saying, oftentimes athletes make bad decisions because they're uncomfortable, whether it's psychologically, whether it's emotionally, whether it's physiologically. And so when we take a young athlete, we just gently, progressively want to build up their tolerance to it. So the baseline, the moment where they feel a little bit of discomfort, they're not going to completely wig out. And so building up that tolerance. So now, like even with Raider, people look at Raider and go, wow, you know, that guy's so tough. I go, he started crying.
Right.
I mean, he would work out with the team, swim, the Team Elite guys, you know, and they would be doing these protocols and he would be going and they would be encouraging him and he would be crying and it would break my heart watching this. I'm like, God, am I ruining this kid forever? And now that same baseline is so high up, now he's coachable.
Right.
Now I can talk to him in the middle of a set, or in the middle of a, like with the weight room, we try to do, we build these fundamental skills, and then we put it together into a drill that forces them to use those fundamental skills in sequence or compound. And then we try to pile on top of that with, like, work on your communication skills, work on maintaining integrity, things like that, good sound decision making. And so over time, he's built up enough tolerance that now his trainability and what we call his coachability has risen. So now his ability to listen to a coach's voice under duress and be able to take that in and make positive changes towards his actions. And that's one of the things that we notice a lot of coaches in the arenas have trouble with.
Right.
Like, you know, I want to be able to make course corrections in the middle of a game without somebody making some quote unquote boneheaded move. But at that point in time, you can't do it. It's already too late. The pieces of the puzzle are already missing.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's progressive overload, right? I mean, it's one of the most fundamental principles in strength and conditioning, and I think that's fantastic. I've noticed it with my own kids as well. I think the problem as coaches sometimes is we allow emotions to creep in, and because they're not getting something, or they're not responding the right way, we take it to that 100th level or whatever it may be. And have an emotional response that oftentimes, you know, shatters confidence, shatters progression, or whatever it may be, and there's frustration that sets in. And you've always, I mean, just your personality, I think, you've always kind of had, Tex always say that you're the Yoda of strength and conditioning, and you kind of have a way about you about keeping your cool and just kind of saying, well, what about this, you know, and but I think there's a lesson there for coaches, is that you got to, when you are developing those athletes, you have to show patience, and then there has to be that progressive overload that occurs.
I mean, just like a parent at some point in time, I mean, I can't be a hypocrite. You know, it ends up being a situation like I can't scream at somebody to maintain their cool if I'm over there wigging out and ripping them a new one. Not to say that sometimes we don't do that, because I feel that, you know, in a harsh world, in a hard environment, I would want my athletes to at least be exposed to maybe somebody being overly critical of them. Right. So oftentimes in our program, my coaches are instructed on fun Fridays to kind of be that jerk, kind of make bad calls, you know, say no rep. Say you don't make their time. They may have made their time, but say they didn't, and see how they respond to it.
Right.
Found that's one of those things that, and they, even the smartest athletes know that we're screwing with them, but it doesn't change their response, because they know that there is a physical, there's something that's going to be physically tormenting to them, even if they know that we're just acting. And they go, you know, you didn't make your time, do it again. And they're like, ah, come on, blah, blah. And then we go, mirror moment.
Right.
Take a deep breath, respond positively to this. And next thing you know, they start putting a smile on their face. They start asking for it. They're like, hey, let's do it. Okay, I got it. And then they get into the acting game, and it just creates this positive snowballing effect.
Well, you do what you just did right there, not even, you know, highlighting it, but labeling it and calling it a mirror moment, and being able to kind of stop in the, you know, and give them an external cue or a coaching cue that you can turn around and replicate in competition and say, hey, it's a mirror moment. Hey, let's go, you know, respond. And being able to draw upon those times, I think that's a critical piece as well. Just a quick one that I wanted to get was, you know, I mean, we've been in this field for a long time now, you know, early on, I mean, clinics and books and websites and all those types of things were important in the learning process, and still are to some degree. But like at this point now, you have a pretty strong sense of who you are and what the system is and those types of things. But you're still a lifelong learner. You're still constantly challenging yourself. What's your I mean, how do you go about now? Filtering either the noise, or what specific area do you, is it research? Is it talking to coaches? Is it, you know?
It's all of it. It's all of it, Ronnie. I have a lesson plan that I have for me. So as a professional, just like, cause I do homeschooling for Raider. And so they have a lesson plan of, you know, language arts and social studies and math and science. So I have a lesson plan for me because I learned that I am obsessive compulsive and I will dive deep into neurophysiology if it allows me. I'm like, oh, wow, this is amazing. And then look at these 12 different branches that it goes into. But so I've learned to say, okay, here's sports psychology, here's physiology, here's some anatomy. And I literally have lesson plans that I do throughout the week that keep me on track. And I have a little bit of a fudge factor that allows me to say, okay, I really like that. So I can kind of chip in. And so I kind of look at it like my staff calls it the Weight Watchers approach, where you have like, here's 10 meats, here's 10 veggies, here's blah, blah, blah. Well, right. You have that allotment, and then you have that extra stuff over here that you can fill in with whatever suits your fancy. So I literally do it all, everything from, but to be honest with you, a lot boils down to coaching techniques to within the specific arena. So watching a lot of videos of, you know, of the specific athletes moving in specific arenas. I get more out of listening to coaching videos of, hey, you know, here's a hitting video by Fred McGriff, and I'm going to watch that. Okay. You know, we're missing something. Let's go ahead and try something here and there.
Right. Well, man, we could go forever, but we end the show with some resources here. What's the best piece of coaching advice you ever received?
That I ever received would be what I call the coach's golden rule is be the coach that you would want coaching you. And I think that's the part where a lot of coaches, which I failed at early in my career, I wouldn't want some dude just ripping me a new rear end every single time that I did an exercise wrong. So it comes down to, I want to coach. We all have these huge aspirations as a professional, as a craftsman, and we should impart that same onto the athletes that we work with. So be the coach that you would want coaching you.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. What about a book, app, and website recommendation?
I'm a big brotherhood kind of guy. I'm a big teammate brotherhood kind of guy. One of my favorite books is Adam Brown's Fearless.
Yeah.
It is just because it's not just military. It's, you know, his wife's Christian faith. The whole book, I'm reading this like, I am so amazed that she stuck by him, you know, through the whole thing. It's just, again, grit and perseverance and pushing through adversity, you know, with the drugs. And it's just, even if you have no aspirations or even if you have any interest in military, it is just a phenomenal read.
Agreed. Well, man, like I said at the beginning, I mean, even though, you know, it was 20-something years since we worked together, it's one of those things where, you know, it's a kind of friendship and respect that, you know, we can pick up 20 years later and just truly value you as a friend. I truly value the way that you look at the world and the way that you go about raising your kid and you know, being a husband. You got another kid on the way, pretty, you know, the week here. Just happy for all your success, man, and all the things that you do. And just, if you are in the Tampa area, and you haven't gone by and seen Raph, you know, you need to do it. You're going to become a better coach for it. So appreciate you coming on the show, man.
Thank you, Ronnie. I appreciate everything you do, brother. Appreciate it. Love you, brother.
Love you, brother. See you, man.
That's it for this episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk. Thanks to this week's guest, as well as our sponsors, for bringing this episode to you for free. Make sure to check out ronmckeefrey.com, where you can join our mailing list, find the show notes, including all the links and resources mentioned, and information about Coach McKeefrey's other products. While you are there, please join Coach McKeefrey in the comments section thanking our guest for sharing. If you haven't subscribed to Iron Game Chalk Talk on YouTube or iTunes yet, make sure to do so. Comments, ratings, and reviews are always welcome. Coach McKeefrey can be found on Twitter at @rmckeefrey. On Facebook and YouTube at @ron.mckeefrey. That's it for this week. Be sure to check back next week for another great episode of Iron Game. Chalk Talk.